Everyone, welcome to Word of Mom Radio here on the Word of Mom Media Network. It is Moms After Dark, and I'm Dori DiCarlo, and I'm thrilled that Kelly Carius is joining me to co-host this show. I have wanted to do a Moms After Dark that was more focused on a political side of life that is going on. And believe me, anybody who knows me has got to be shocked as all get out. Because until the last 4 years, I was the least politically involved person ever. I have voted in every election since I'm 18 years old because it is my civic duty. I've always felt I knew enough to intelligently vote. I voted my conscience. I was never a registered Republican or a Democrat. I was an independent. Trust me, I am now a registered Democrat because I want a voice in the primaries as well. But 4 years ago woke me up, like it woke people up all around the world, to the fact that we've let other people do too much of the voting for us. And even though we had a record number of votes in the United States election, this past presidential election, still, there are about 100,000 people in this country or more that still haven't voted and still don't vote. And it's like, what is wrong with you? And to me, it's an amazing thing because most of the people who don't vote bitch the loudest. And it's like, you know what? You don't vote. You got no right, as far as I'm concerned, to say jack spit about anything going on. Because you didn't exercise your right to vote, you just think you can complain. And it's so crazy. And Kelly and I were taping. She was on the show last week sharing her fabulous organization, No Such Thing as a Bully. And we just started talking about stuff, and I was like, hey, Kelly, want to host this show with me? Because Kelly is Canadian, and I really want to know what the Canadian side, looking over the back fence at their next-door neighbors whose borders are now closed to each other. I'm serious. Canadians have to just be going, what the hell? You know, WTF has just got to be flashing everywhere. I mean, it really does. So, Kelly, welcome in. And, you know, what woke you up to politics? Talk about your journey.
So I have been a voter most of my life from a young age, and I have some thoughts about what keeps people from that. I actually was a part of a small political campaign. I'll never forget it. MDP, member of parliament, so just for our little local area in Saskatchewan, Canada, Evan Carlson. And that was, I was quite young then. It was something my parents were involved in, and I got involved with them. And I think actually just them doing that one thing was what reinforced for me that you got to vote. Voting is important. And then I would say that I am a somewhat informed elector, but I think it's really hard to be fully informed. And it's really, I guess, depending on your perspective, I'm a see all points of view kind of person. So I want to see all those kinds of points of views. And there's some apps I wouldn't mind talking about that I found really helpful these past few years. So then in 2016, yeah, the whole attention to Trump thing just sucked me in like a like a soap opera, to the point where I had to at times kind of step back and just be like, whoa, Kelly, you're not helping yourself or the world by watching any more of this. And then the other thing that turns my mind to is media, and media intention and attention. And so for me, politics is full of social issues, and it's also a social issue. And I really get captivated by the psychology of all of it.
You know, the psychology is a really interesting thing to reference when it comes to politics. It really
everything.
Is because it's, I mean, it's a horrible phrase, but I mean, believe me, every once in a while, I just, it's like, what is this, like a dick measuring contest or something? You know, it really is.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what the hell? And it's like, right? It's not just me.
It is. To me, it is intensive at so many levels. And so it's like, you know, if you're going through a marketing course, you're spending time learning what people's triggers are. What do they want, and what do they not want, and what hits the deep psychological fear that makes them buy my thing, and politics is no different, except for buy my thing is support me.
You know, it's so amazing because, you know, let's face it, the United States, we're a young country. We have a short attention span. I guess it comes back from my days being on the Leadership Council Board of Directors for NFIB, which is the National Federation of Independent Business. And here in the United States, every single state has its own chapter, and they are strictly there to fight for the rights of small business, making sure that elected officials aren't forgetting the small business people that they so often squash. And we were at the Capitol, and one of the legislators here in Connecticut was bragging, in my opinion, humbly, about how he had just put a bill up, you know, for appropriation, saying that before they adopt a new policy and put it into law, they actually do a study to see how it's going to affect the constituents. And I'm sitting there, we're in the rotunda, and I looked around, and I always used to feel like Mr. Smith goes to Washington whenever he's on the Capitol, just, you know, this young, naive girl, because people would, I wasn't that young, but I was still naive, because people would literally quote, you know, this article and this law, and I'm like, I just raised my hand. I'm like, excuse me. All of us are business owners here. And so if any one of us were to create a new product, a new service, a new anything, and put it into our business without finding out if our demographic, if this is going to work, if it's something that they want or, you know, something that they need, we'd be out of business. So for you standing there kind of patting yourself on the back, that you think it should be a law that they have to look at how it's going to affect people before, because five people called up and complained about something, we now need to make a law that's going to affect, 1.4 million people or whatever. I was like, you know, I don't understand how politicians don't remember that they got hired for a temp job and that you can get fired in the next election. And so it's really important to stop thinking about your career and remember about the people who voted you into office and their needs. And it was so funny because Andy afterwards, he was the president, and he was like, I was like, you know, I really should step off this board because I'm so over my head. And he was like, no, you're the only person that actually would say something like that. Everybody else is sitting there like, I can't believe she said that. And they were like, yeah, that's right. That's right. It's true. She
yeah.
was like, yo, how come none of you step up? You know?
Well, because that's intimidating. And that is one of the reasons that I believe that many people don't vote. It's also one of the reasons that my attention was drawn to Stacey Abrams in Georgia, I think,
mm-hmm.
Because they had a very big push of just really encouraging people to vote and supporting them to vote. And when I imagine that in my head, I imagine them just like explaining the whole process. Well, here's what the building, you know, you're going to go to looks like. And this is the reason you go to this building is because you live in this area. And here's what you can expect to be asked for. And here's how you can expect things to go. And I just think that for so many people, like you and I, Dori, will jump into things with both feet, you know, no problem most of the time, except for maybe not out of an airplane for me, but, you know, but most things are not scary to certain personality types and to people with certain past experiences. But if you haven't had those welcoming past experiences and you have a personality type that is more introverted or you're suffering from trauma, then you're less likely to take those steps out and take risks. And even though... And this is probably part of it too, you know. To you and I, going to the store or going to vote is not a risk. But to some of my friends who live at Muscogees, a First Nations reserve nearby me here in Red Deer, going to a store is a risk because you walk in the store and you're tight and somebody's following you. You know, and then it's easy to make the leap that doing other things is also a risk. And why would I do that when it doesn't even seem to matter anyway?
You know,
so I think there's a lot of really deep, deep factors that exist when people talk about the barriers that exist.
That's a really interesting point. I think that is why voting by mail is so important. People shouldn't feel intimidated, and every vote counts and every vote matters. And we have states in the United States where 90% or more of the citizens in that state vote by mail and have voted by mail for years.
Yeah.
Decades. It's only in this last election, you know, because you had somebody who from his first election was like, are you going to accept these results as long as I win? If I don't win, it was rigged. And, you know, so it's an amazing thing to me that to me, it's right out of the dictator's handbook, that intimidation, that pick a lie. Say the lie over and over and over again and never deviate from the lie. Because if you tell that lie long enough, even you will start to believe it's true. And
yep.
It really is. And what's going on now with Republicans in how many states trying to change voter laws to make it harder for people who are predominantly of color in predominantly Democratic you know, neighborhoods, arenas, voting patterns to make it more difficult for them to vote. I love what Jen Psaki had to say about it, who's our press secretary. And in her saying, instead of the GOP changing their policies so people want to vote for them, they'll just make it harder for the people who voted against them to vote. It's just, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I mean, here in the United States, women have only had the right to vote for 100 years. And minorities have only had the right to vote for, I think, 40 or 50. To make it even more difficult to try to have this voter intimidation and stuff, it's beyond me. You know, here in Connecticut, Susan Bisewitz, who is now our lieutenant governor, I wound up on NFIB's board of directors because while she was Secretary of State, she did a tremendous amount for small businesses and had a TV show on public TV here in Connecticut and invited me to be a guest. And she had Andy, who was the president of the Connecticut chapter of NFIB, she had me there representing small business. And that's how I wound up meeting him. We talked afterwards and I wound up on the, you know, as a board of director of the council. She actually, as Secretary of State, with a bus, you know, one of those luxury buses to schools, picking up kids 18 years old and old to take them to register to vote. And she would say, I'm not asking you Republican or Democrat. It doesn't matter to me. Your vote matters to me. Who you yeah. vote for is your choice. But your vote matters to me. And it was so funny when she was running, she and Lamont were running for governor and lieutenant governor. I had her back on Word of Mom Radio, and I was like, you know, Susan, it's so funny. All these years, I've never known whether you were a Republican or a Democrat. I never asked. And because to me, she was what a politician is supposed to be. Somebody who is going to fight for everyone, not just the people who are yeah. going to vote for her party. And, you know, it's funny. To me, that's the difference. When I look over the fence on my side, looking into Canada, you have a government that actually takes care of everybody, not
yeah,
just the people
look,
who actually like them.
We look better from a distance. We look better from a distance. Than we do up close.
Oh, good. Then help me break those myths. Break those myths. Tell me what I'm missing.
Break those myths.
Yeah, tell me what I'm missing.
So, okay. Politically, I mean, we've got our share of scandals. And Trudeau is certainly taking some knocks for mishandling intertwining business relationships and personal relationships in ways that are beneficial to people that he's close to. Now, whether that is naivete, I don't see how it could be. There's just issues that he was in the room making decisions on when he should have excused himself. And so that puts a good chunk of Canadian money, I think, kind of out the window. I don't know if that's ever been delivered back. So we have those kinds of things that go on. We have within our cabinet some racism issues that have happened over the past, but we've also got a really nice diverse group in there too, which I appreciate. We have huge issues with our First Nations people and having been the colonizers and settling the land that was not ours and taking it and then writing government treaties that don't make always a lot of sense or aren't followed and There's a pile of issues with First Nations water, housing, jobs, racism. We have trickle over from your stuff in the United States. We've got some groups of Trump supporters here, and also people who, you know, you might kind of look or complying with public health orders. We've also got a good sized band of people who are not complying with public health orders and who really see the government in the States up till 2020 as being on the right track with just letting things roam, go free and see what happens. So, I think the biggest difference that I see is the way that our media covers things. It's a little more low key, and we don't have the same kind of sort of 24-hour news cycle going on in the same way as the States.
To honestly say that until 45, I don't think we had a 24-hour news cycle either. You know, because before that man, who just needed his ego stroked at every possible turn. I mean,
yeah,
it's one of the nicest things in the world that I don't have to hear from President Biden 47 times a day. And that he doesn't feel the need. You know, there was a big uproar that he took longer to have his first live press conference than any other president. It was almost 60 days into his presidency. And the press was, up in arms about it. And he was like, I've been a little busy with a pandemic. So it was really more important to me to get a handle on getting these vaccinations and everything in place and trying to get our economy back on track and getting this stimulus package passed. So, I really wanted him to say, so just shut up. And seriously, I was working. Lived with a president who, took golf trips every single weekend. They gave him crap for going home, for Easter weekend or a couple of weeks before that. He, lives in Delaware, less than 2 hours from the White House. And he actually went to his Delaware home to celebrate distantly with his immediate family. And I'm like, really? You have nothing to pick on with this man, so let's go with something like that. It's just, I'm telling you, it's killing me. It's so funny.
Here's how I watch the press. Now, given that this was not a soap opera piece of my life until Trump started running. But I don't have cable. I just have a computer hooked up to my TV, a computer with a broken screen, mind you, hooked up to my TV. And then I have YouTube on there and Netflix. And so when I'm looking to find information about an issue, I will just look at any news station I can find about it, whether it's not for every issue, but you watch something about it on Fox, watch something about it on AON, watch something about it on MSNBC, and CNN, and then my mind just goes to everybody's got an agenda, and the news media also has an agenda. And in a lot of cases, the biggest part of their agenda is their advertisers. So now, instead of the old style here's the facts, make your decisions kind of reporting. We've got so many talking heads just delivering what their advertisers want. And it makes it almost impossible for a station to be, to present completely impartial, impartial information. I thought Shepard Smith, I thought he was going to do that. I thought he was going to be that guy, but he hasn't turned out to be, I don't think.
Well, he wound up leaving where he was because, you know, he just couldn't. I give him a lot of credit. I give him a tremendous amount of credit for leaving a news station as one of the anchors because you just couldn't continue lying to the American people. I mean,
he was he was pretty balanced. He was one of their balanced reporters, and he I think my understanding is that he left when he just couldn't kind of withstand that pressure to not be balanced anymore. And then I saw an interview with him right after he left, and you know his intention was to be justifying him as a commentator on a few spots, and I was a little disappointed to see that.
I haven't seen him in any commentary spots. You know, it's interesting you were talking about not having regular TV. You just, I don't either. And I don't watch any of the news channels. I literally YouTube everything, and I watch the full press conference. I watch the full session. I don't want to hear the commentator slant on it. I don't want, I love when, my Jen Psaki's press conferences to me are just so unbelievably informative. I have so much respect for the fact that this woman will actually say, I don't know the answer to that question, but I will find it out for you and get back to you with it.
Yeah.
I love that she
does
that.
She's the calmest, most firm person I've ever seen.
It's so wonderful. It's so wonderful to see. And I love how, you know, it's really disheartening to listen to the questions the press ask and how they will pick a quote that, you know, oh my God, just sounds horrible. And she'll just really calmly be like, you know what? You and I know what we're talking about. So just so everybody else in the room, here's the entire thing that was said. And she will do the entire quote and go, you know, it's curious to me that this is what you focused in on, you know, or she'll say that somebody, President Biden had said, about how the majority of law enforcement are good officers, police officers, in looking at everything going on with, you know, George Floyd and just the whole Black Lives Matter movement.
Oh, we've
and,
got that issue here as well. I forgot to mention that one.
You know, well, it's just, it's running rampant. It's insane right now. You know, but a reporter said to her, you know, what did the president mean? And that was the tone. What did the president mean when he said that the majority of law enforcement officers are good officers? She was like, exactly what he said. That's what he meant. Next.
Yeah.
It was just like, oh, snap. I was like, thank you. That's what he meant. He said exactly what he meant, you know, and or they'll, you know, it's amazing how they try to incite something. They're trying, you know, I mean, for their sound bites, and it's such a shame. You know, I think back to Walter Cronkite. The guy's got to be spinning in his grave because I remember clips because I was only three when President Kennedy was assassinated. But when he reported it, that he had died, that the reports had come in, he took off his glasses for a moment and kind of said, did that, cleared his throat a bit and continued on. And I watched a documentary about him, and I can't even tell you how many times he apologized because he felt like he let the American people down, because it wasn't his job to react to the news. It was just his job to report the news. And, you know, it was a personal thing. And it was just like, wow. That's like I look at all the quotes that Dan Rather, you know, through all of the 4 years of just lying press conferences and stuff, and Dan Rather just being like, what the hell is going on? I mean, what is going, this is insanity. It's insanity. And you listen, and it's just, I was listening to Jim Jordan, Senator Jordan, who, you know, and I don't want to misquote which university that he was in, you know, and turned the other way, you know, at all of the abuse that was going on and whatnot. And here he is jumping all over Dr. Anthony Fauci about, when are we going to get our liberties back, Dr. Fauci? You don't think the American people's First Amendment rights have been... And Fauci's just sitting there as Jordan is just going out like insane. You would hear the things he's saying, and Fauci's just like, you know, this is not personal, Senator. I'm looking at this from a medical standpoint. This is from a medical standpoint. We're in the middle of a global pandemic that has killed in the United States. We have lost 500,000, you know, 560,000 people plus. Okay?
Yeah.
That's how many people have already died. And my daddy's one of those numbers. And just today, and it was someone I knew at the grocery store roundup, meeting up, and, you know, who knew? It was like, oh, hi. And I have my mask on, and when I go grocery shopping, I actually put an N95 mask underneath my cloth mask, just for added protection, and it's baseball season, so I have my Yankees mask on. And I don't even think about my mask anymore. I'm not going to be bothered by the fact that I have to wear it. It is what it is because it is what it is. Same reason I don't let myself get bothered because I have to wear clothes. You know? What are the what?
Do you have to wear a mask where you are, or is it a voluntary?
You have to wear a mask going into a store. You know, outside, you don't have to wear a mask. I still do. You know, I walk a lot, and I always have a mask. I don't wear it if I'm by myself and there's nobody walking. But as soon as I see someone, before I'm in, you know, 100 yards of them, I've already put my mask up, and I'll go up, you know, and give them the walkway, unless they have a dog, in which case you go up on the grass, and I'll stay on the walkway. Only because why should the dog have to be on the walkway? Much rather be in the grass smelling stuff. But it was so funny. You know, she had her mask halfway on and was like, oh, my God, so ridiculous. I was like, I don't even think about it anymore. And it was below her nose. And I was like, please put that up. And she's like, you know, I don't. And I was like, yeah, I'm not going to walk with you. But you really should be wearing it. And it's like, you know, it's so annoying to me because I'm sorry. Your personal freedom ends when you walk out your front door. Restaurants and businesses have had signs that say no shoes, no shirt, no service. Forever. Nobody says a word. But you got to wear a mask to go into a store and you want to be in a pissing contest over it? It's like, I'm sorry, the good of the many outweighs the, you know, dislike of the few. What's it like where you are? Is it mandatory as far as masks?
It is. Yeah, it's mandatory. Most people are working from home if they can. We just went back to, I think it's called phase one lockdown, so no more indoor restaurants. And patios, restaurant patios, can still be open. Masks are mandatory indoors. Other workplaces have staff working in cohorts, so that if one group of staff is quarantined, then the other one can keep on working.
Okay.
We have tests quite easily available, and vaccines are becoming more easily available. There's a lot of vaccine hesitancy for sure, the one thing that I have real trouble justifying with a lot of it is our big stores are open, you know, the Walmarts and the Canadian Tires, and while our sole proprietorships are closed. And I'm not so sure about the logic of that. I get the eating in restaurants piece, I guess, and there's been a lot of restaurants that have made just incredible adaptations to what they do. To survive. But I just have trouble seeing how just certain smaller stores have had to close down when the bigger ones are open during certain times.
Here's my question to you. Are they closed mandatorily or voluntarily?
Mandatory when they've been closed.
Really?
There's sure no businesses closing here voluntarily.
I didn't mean quote unquote voluntarily. I just meant more because people are being isolated, because so many people are afraid to go out.
I think
it's much harder to keep a small specialty store open than it would be for a Walmart or a, you know, those larger chains that have a corporation behind them. That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, I think that there was a period of time where everything was just shut down. Everything that could possibly be shut down was shut down. And then we went into phase two and things were reopened at, I believe, at like a 15% capacity.
Mm-hmm.
I could be like factually wrong about anything that I'm saying. So at the same time that everything was shut down, the hair appointments, massage therapists, all of that was shut down as well. And then massage therapy and the sort of health related treatments could be accessed by prescription, and then they opened up fully. And then now, as the restaurants are closing down again because their numbers are going up, those services seem to be staying open. So it seems a little bit different things are being done this time around.
There's
a lot of people who don't like. You know, like how Dr. Fauci gets criticized here in Alberta. Why is her name not coming to me? That's ridiculous. It'll pop into my brain later. But our main health person in Alberta, she gets criticized like crazy. And all she's really doing, you know, is making recommendations to the government powers that be.
Right.
But yeah, she gets criticized, and we've got a government in Alberta worth a little bit of criticism right now as well, in terms of a few other things. We just had an education curriculum come out that everybody is going absolutely crazy for, introducing Genghis Khan in grade 2 is one of the things. It's the weirdest school curriculum I think I've ever seen.
What?
Yeah. So that
in
is
second
also
grade,
the same.
In grade 2.
Yeah. There's more. There's so much more. We could do
Is that because of the Night at the Museum movie? You know, let's explain to them who he really is.
It's like this curriculum was written by people who never met children. I do not understand it. There's an overview available of it online. I think if anybody listening wants to have a look, Government of Alberta 2021 curriculum, I wouldn't spend a lot of time on it if I didn't have to. But we've got a bunch of school divisions here that are just saying, well, we refuse to implement that.
Gee, can't imagine why.
So, oh, geez, honestly. So, that's a bit of a thing. And so basically when I'm watching, if I watch like a Facebook Live, Hinshaw, her name is, if I watch a Facebook Live with her, and maybe with Jason Kenney, who is our premier in Alberta, it's just such a mad, wild 50-50 split there with people who are saying, yes, things should be closed. And, you know, hey, all you other 50% of people that aren't following directions, you're the reason why we 50% have to stay inside, which is really such a victim sort of mindset that I never want to see that one. But there's just such a split about what we should be doing about it. It's amazing. I actually had a look at the Spanish flu pandemic, I think, and there were disease deniers and mask defiers then as well.
And you know what? It became a law. You could go to jail if you didn't wear a mask. Isn't it amazing? 100 years later, we haven't learned jack spit. And you know, that saying, avoid it like the plague, obviously nobody wants to avoid the plague. You haven't figured that out yet. It's so insane to me because let's face it, hindsight being 2020, we here in the United States have only really started fighting this collectively since January 20th when a new administration came in. Because President Biden, this week, we've now surpassed over 4 million vaccinations per day. The previous administration, giving all the credit for the fact that they threw out regulations so the FDA could get these vaccinations, you know, and for people that are out there and there's no long-term studies, they need to remember that all of the components that make up a vaccine have been studied. Yes, it's in this combination that we don't have more long-term data, but the components are there. And when H1N1 happened and the SARS virus and the SARS vaccine, you know, this is a gene therapy. You're not getting a live vaccine. This is making it. What people don't seem to understand is getting this vaccine doesn't mean you won't get COVID, because you can get COVID. You can still get COVID because you've gotten the vaccination. What it really does for 98 or 7% of the people is that you won't be hospitalized. You won't have a severe case. You'll get sick for a couple of days and you'll get it because your body will have the antibodies and the genetic makeup to fight it. Now, there is something that I was reading that maybe a year from now, we may have to have a booster. People get flu shots every year. It totally cracks me up, like the whole thing with the vaccine passport. There are countries, if you are traveling into certain countries, you have to have certain vaccinations or they won't let you in.
Yeah.
Because they don't want, you know, where are the anti-vaxxers then? Oh, well, I'm not going to do that. It's like, that's your choice. Don't go to that country. Those are the rules. You know, so I don't, it's weird. I don't believe that anybody should be forced to have to have any kind of a vaccination. It should be your choice. And all we can do is keep our freaking fingers crossed that on a global level, 75% of the population feels the need to take care of their neighbor by getting a freaking shot.
Well, okay, that take care of your neighbor part. I have a little rant here to say. Now,
good rant.
My understanding of the vaccine is that, yeah, you take it and you will not get as sick. But you can still have COVID and you still need to wear a mask to take care
right.
of your neighbor. Because you can still spread COVID. And if you spread it to someone who is not vaccinated, they may have a more severe response than you. Do you think I have that correct?
Correct.
So I'm watching a clip the other day with Rachel Maddow, who I really like. And I was really frustrated by this because she was encouraging the vaccine, but she was hitting like probably 40% hard in what she was saying about how if you take the vaccine, you are protecting your neighbor or you're protecting other people. And I disagree with that because of what I just said and what I hear people say, people who are medically informed say about the vaccine. And I see a huge part of the problem of the reluctance as being so much misinformation, whether well-intended or not. I just think that everyone who is someone who is talking about it needs to be so factual about what it actually does. Because now you just hear people say, well, I got the vaccine. Why do I need to, I can just do everything. I don't have to take all those precautions anymore.
I haven't heard anybody say that. And I everybody that I've heard constantly says, you know, you still have to wear your mask, socially distance. What they're saying, the flip side of that is, let's say, you know, there's a group of 10 of you and all of you have been vaccinated, that it's okay. All right. All of you have been vaccinated. You're all together. It's okay if you don't want to wear a mask.
Yeah.
You know, because
that was not...
you've all been, you know, that's you know, what I'm hearing. When
yeah.
I say
and
about
I'm
taking care of your neighbor,
some...
I'm really talking about herd immunity. Because the only
yeah.
way herd immunity makes sense is, you know, the majority of the population being vaccinated, the fact that we have a better understanding about how to treat people who do get it, because people, you know, and eventually even the Spanish flu, and let's face it, 100 years ago, they had aspirin and quinine to take care of the Spanish, you know, there was nothing. There was, you know, people, millions, hundreds of millions of people died of the Spanish flu, you know, because it again, you had nothing. You had aspirin and quinine to try to get people through this. And it took 2 years. The first wave killed 800,000 people. The second wave, what was it, 50 million? You know, I mean, it's a wave. But guess what? It also ended. And life went back to normal. You know, and when H1N1 happened, you know what, 12 years ago, 14 years ago when Biden and President Obama and Joe Biden were in office, 14,000 people in this country died.
Mm-hmm.
You know, millions got the virus. They worked on the vaccine. This is where that gene therapy began, was through SARS, through H1N1. And ironically, Trump was, you know, tweeting away how Obama should be impeached, you know, that 14,000 people died. He didn't have to close the country. They worked on getting a vaccine. They worked on the protocol. They created the playbook. They created the pandemic playbook. Because what people don't understand in government, one, you know, it's not, okay, all of this happened and everybody get together. There are all these different protocols. That, you know, this department handles this. This department handles that. That's why they put together this playbook. So all of the departments, everybody knew who had to be contacted where. And I watched the presidential on YouTube. I YouTubed 45 up there when he dismantled the pandemic unit. And this was scientists stationed all around the globe, not just here in the U.S., but all around the globe, including our scientists in Wuhan, in China. And he fired all of them. He got rid of, he just wiped out the pandemic unit, called all these people back from all over the world, and said, as a businessman, it insulted his intelligence to be paying thousands of people for something that might never happen. And if it did, he could always just hire them back and they can get it done.
Yeah.
You know, not understanding how government works. And then threw out the pandemic playbook because we don't need that. We have a better one. Now, again, like I said, all the credit in the world that he pushed that Operation Warp Speed and whatnot to get this vaccine, to do this, to do that, to get all of that done. And the reality is, in him getting all of that done, there were less than 8 million people that were vaccinated in the whole 4 months leading up to this transition of new leadership, because he was more focused on the big lie that he really won the election and it got stolen, as thousands of people were dying a day. That was what that man's focus was. And I've heard people when President Biden did his press conference and talking about how, you know, here he had you know, wanted to get 100,000 people, 100,000 vaccinations in his first 100 days, and he surpassed that, you know, halfway through. He's, you know, now he's going to surpass 200,000 in the first, you know, I mean, million people in the first 100 days. It's remarkable. But there was nothing in place. The only reason that I personally think that this has gone so well since he got in is because he still had the playbook. He wrote the playbook along with President Obama. They knew what to do. And he came in without an ego and just did what had to be done. He deferred to scientists. We are going to listen to what they have to say, because a pandemic is not politics. Science is science. You know, I mean, and it's just, it's amazing to me. It's truly amazing to me to think any other way but the fact that science is science. And you can't refute science. It doesn't work that way. And I again, just thinking of today, and, you know, this is just so ridiculous. I just don't believe in this. Oh, okay. How do you explain? How do you refute that? How do you, you know, go back with somebody who says to you, I don't believe in it? You know? Kelly,
yeah,
did we lose you? Oh, you are there. Okay.
I'm here. That is a tough question. How do you address that when people just don't believe it? And so there's so many conspiracy theories that run so deep and have, like, again, when I look at the psychology of them, I just want to say to people, that's too big. Can't you see that what you're saying is not making sense? You know, doctors at a hospital are not lying about what is on a death certificate.
Oh my gosh.
That's not going to happen. I mean,
but this
maybe
is because conspiracy theorists don't realize falsifying a death report means you lose your medical license.
Yeah.
You know, there's no, oh, don't do that again. What doctor is going to risk their medical license to put the hospitals don't make more money because COVID is on the death certificate. The microchip. I love the microchip theory. You know, that's what they're doing. It's like, really? Hello, you're on your phone. You're on your cell phone. You have an easy pass in your car. You're on the internet. They don't need to microchip you. You carry around. They can find you wherever you are. Big Brother's everywhere.
Yeah.
You really think they need to stick a chip in you? I mean, grab a glove. Get in the game.
Yeah. No, I mean, and it's funny that that's exactly where you're reading so much of that stuff is on people's phones and social media accounts. And yeah.
You know, this is what... It's an amazing thing because the two sides of the coin. Social media is remarkable. It's remarkable to be able to create friendships with people on the other side of the world and to reconnect with people that you haven't seen in 40 years and everything else. There's such wonderful things about social media. And then you have the flip side of the coin, that this is where people are getting their news. And people stop at the headline. They see this shocking headline, and that becomes the fact. They don't read the story. They don't, you know, my brother and I go back and forth because he was a 45 supporter. Oh, yeah, it's just fake news. I'm like, shut up. I was like, first off, where do you get your news? You know, what do you read? Oh, I read this, I read that. I was like, see, I don't read anything. Oh, see, then you don't know what you're talking about. I was like, no, I watched the full conference. When something would happen and 45 said something and people were talking about his rally, I'd YouTube it and literally watch the whole thing. Wanting to stick needles in my ears, but literally would watch the whole thing. That whole thing with Bricks when he said about the bleach and people just, oh, he said about drinking Clorox and injecting this. And I was like, that's actually not what he said. Here's what he said, you know, and he was talking about, you know, is there a way with, you know, heat and stuff like that, that light kills it. Maybe we can hit somebody with intensive heat and, you know, a disinfectant, you know, kills it on contact. I mean, maybe there's a way that you can inject that. And there's Dr. Bricks just sitting there with like her face in her hand. What the hell is this man saying? But that's what he said. As stupid as it was, because I'm sitting there going, I can't believe this guy just said this. He just actually questioned whether you can inject disinfectant. Now, the media is the one who took it to the nth degree. The flip side was 4 months later, people were still calling the CDC to ask if they could inject bleach because the president said so.
The problem that, like, I watched the psychology of that one like crazy. Mm-hmm. And it was horrifying seeing him say that in public, but mm-hmm. I could totally see something like that being said at a brainstorming meeting, you know, where it's not a public setting and everybody's
right.
just throwing out ideas. Well, what about this? What about, do we know this? What? And then, yeah, I was really disappointed to see the way the media took that and ran, because everything was so bad and stupid anyway that it just needed to be factual. That's all I could, that I just kept thinking that you just need to say the facts of what's going on and let people mm-hmm. decide, because as soon as you start distorting it, now you're just doing that because you don't like the guy. Oh, I have a question for you.
Oh, maybe I'll have an
so
answer.
So it's an opinion question for sure. The budget bills that Biden is passing with things in them so that he can do it with 51 votes, and then they're saying that they're essentially bipartisan because the people, even if the politicians don't, those bills, the Republican people on the ground support those bills. What do you think of that? Do they? Is it bipartisan in that way?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, his polling, you know, is going anywhere between 60 and 70% of people, you know, so you have Republicans and Democrats in there. And it was interesting in his press conference, when somebody had said to him about, you know, you ran on the platform of uniting the, you know, reuniting the country. And he was like, yes. He said, the people. He said, I wasn't talking about reuniting Congress and the Senate. He said, because the voters, and I love how he said voters, pronounced that T really hard, support what I'm doing. And so perhaps the elected officials need to listen to their constituents, because how do you vote against? They voted, these same people in the Senate that voted almost a $2 trillion tax cut for the richest companies and people in the United States are the same people voting against this policy that is actually going to benefit 85% of friggin' Americans. It's unbelievable to me, but that's in the Senate because their constituents are fighting for the, you know, want this passed, just like gun laws. Most, you look at registered gun owners, they're all for background checks. Nobody's coming to take away your guns. Nobody's trying to squash the Second Amendment, which is what the, you know, Republicans cry all the time. No, they're not. They're not doing that. But explain to me how you need an Uzi to go deer hunting. Sorry, you hit a deer with an Uzi, you're not going to have any deer to eat. You know, it's ridiculous. Sensible
That's
gun laws.
Huge difference between Canada and the United States.
Tell me the difference. Tell us the difference.
So in Canada, when when my relationship broke down, I don't know if this happens in the States. I just can't imagine that it does. When my relationship broke down, I was with a guy that enjoyed hunting. And he went to re-register his gun license. And I got a phone call to ask if he should get a gun or not.
Wow.
Right? So, it's so much tighter. It's so much tighter. I don't even know where you'd buy a gun. Sports stores, I guess. Specialty stores in Canada. It's not easy to just go buy a gun in Canada if you're not a hunter and don't know where to go. The automatic weapons, that's just not, I don't even think that those are available at all. And, you know, I mean, for sure we have things happen here. There's definitely been shootings and mass shootings here, but not nearly to the same level that I see happening in the States.
You know,
and I hear tales. I've never seen this myself either, but I hear tales from Canadians who have been in the States that, you know, you might be somewhere and somebody just walks in and they're just armed to the gills. And that is not something that you see in Canada at all.
Well, that's the, you know, carry states. There are states in the United States where you are allowed, most of the states in the country, you are not allowed to openly carry a weapon, you know, but yeah, it's insane. You know, I grew up on a farm and we had a shotgun case. There were the shotguns, the shells were right above it. You know, there was a lock on the case, but we all knew we weren't allowed to go into it. But my grandfather always used to say, that's a double barrel shotgun. You need more than two shots to take down a deer, you don't deserve to eat. You know, and it was just, you know, I'm like, that's a hunter. You know, that's a hunter. And they went and they sat and, you know, they did. It's insane to me. And, you know, you getting that phone call, that's a background check. That's what background checks are all about. Is this person, and this is not, they're not talking to the psychologist. They're talking to the people that actually know these people. That's somebody who's, you know, can they be trusted with a gun? And it's just, you know, here in the United States, the pandemic of hate and this, you know, I hate the world, I hate myself, you know, so many of these shooters afterwards shoot themselves, you know, so it's like, well, I'm going to take myself out, but I'm going to take as many people as I can first. I don't understand. I don't understand this level of hate. I don't understand the level of disregard for human life. On so many levels. And seriously, you know, in these past years, people have died sitting in church, at a movie theater, you know, going shopping in a mall. Not that there's any justification or any location that this should happen in, but oh my gosh. And I'm sorry to anybody that wants to take offense at what I'm going to say. I'm apologizing ahead of time. But why is it every time you look at a picture of these freaking shooters, it's a white guy anywhere between, you know, 18 and 65 who have on one of those red hats? I'm sorry. That man unleashed, he gave license and voice to this vitriolic hate in this country, to the systemic racism that, you know, it's unbelievable to me how people don't understand that that Confederate flag is the same thing here in the United States as flying a swastika in Germany, in any other country in Europe. How do they not get that?
Well, I mean, it's just a totally different perspective. And so my logic mind automatically goes, oh, come on, I'm sure that that's not true of all of the shooters. And then I'm like, well, why am I trying to defend shooters? But so when I look at it from a social perspective, like the differences between countries, I'm having a quick look here at how our gun laws developed in Canada. And so what it is you have your background check and you get a PAL, possession and acquisition license, and you have to renew that every 5 years to legally have a weapon, a firearm. And our first criminal code laws in introducing penalties for carrying a pistol without a permit were in 1892. And then they just kept getting a little more stringent, and they relaxed it for 1 year, but then they pulled back. Then they banned, in 2020, the federal government banned 1,500 models of semi-automatic rifles. And in 2021, they're proposing initiating an optional program to buy back those weapons that they banned. So now if somebody bought it legally and now it's illegal, they're working out a program to buy that back from the person.
I think that's awesome. They do that here in the States where people can turn back in their guns and do buybacks and things like that. I believe certain states do that, you know, and I think that that should be encouraged. I really do.
What do you think about, like, so Saskatchewan and Alberta in Canada, that's the hotspot for the Ku Klux Klan back in the day, and maybe even still, I don't know. I guess I just always question, like, how does that history and racism and power play into how the gun laws developed in the state?
That's a good question. Excuse me. I've never thought
of
it.
And then I'm also questioning the how deep the racism existed before Trump. And I just see him as an activator.
Oh, absolutely.
No.
I like I said, he gave voice to that vitriolic hate. He gave license to come closet with it. You know, he gave license to take off your hood. You didn't have to wear a hood anymore. You could parade. You could literally, you know, and we have a constitution here in the United States. And the reality is the two sides of the coin. If we're going to have free speech in this country, sadly, it means all speech has to be free. Even if you are going to stand on a soapbox to scream back at somebody who is saying things that you hate, you know, that is out there marching with signs that, you know, kill the blacks, and I'm, you know, way worse words than that, and all of those things. And sadly, they have the right to that hate and to that anger. They just don't have the right to hurt people because of it. But again, people were closeted over it. And then 45 came into office and just was right there on their level. You know, having people thrown out of his rallies. Go ahead, punch him in the face. I'll pay your legal fees. Literally saying that to people. Literally saying.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the man literally said, I could walk down Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody in the face and my numbers would go up. The words of the president matter. And when you have a president calling people that are trying to seek asylum in our country less than human, they're not even human, they're animals. It's exactly what Hitler said of the Jews. It's literally just taking pages out of the dictator handbook of picking a group of people and focusing all of the hate on it. You know, people talk about the cancel culture and they want to blame us liberals, you know, because people want to have those Confederate statues taken down out of parks. They're not asking for them to be destroyed, but they're asking for them to be put in museums. Let's put them in the place where we learn from our mistakes, but let's not glorify this. Oh, and, you know, we're such a cancel culture. Colin Kaepernick took a knee as a quarterback during our national anthem, and the president of the United States called for him to be fired. Literally called the NFL wanted him fired, wanted any player who took a knee to lose their job. Do you know the history of Colin Kaepernick and him taking a knee and why he took the knee?
Oh, I do, yeah.
Okay, well,
he
talked to a Green Beret and about how can he find a way to protest the national anthem because of the loss of black lives. This was how the whole beginning part of the BLM movement, and the Green Beret suggested that he kneel because you kneel when you pray. You kneel as a sign of respect. When a soldier is fallen and they hand the flag that has draped their coffin, they kneel and give that family the flag out of respect. So Kaepernick knelt to honor the men and women who fought for our freedom but wanted to make a statement about Black Lives Mattering. And the president of the United States cost him his job. People boycott the NFL. If they're not going to follow them, stop watching the games. Now you have senators, because Major League Baseball moved their All-Star game out of Georgia because of the draconian laws that they have just put into place for voters voter suppression. And that's okay. Now you've got three senators that are calling for, you know, all of these different sanctions, and there's a legal thing that I can't believe, I can't remember the name, it's gone out of my head, a benefit that the Major League Baseball has had for almost 100 years, and they want it rescinded and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know what? They asked Jen Psaki, what is President Biden have to say about Major League Baseball moving the game out of Atlanta? And do you know what her response was? She said, the president has nothing to say about that. That's a decision made by Major League Baseball. Next.
Yeah. Well, and it is. And so as you're talking, I'm having this question in my head. Who created the term cancel culture? Who first,
I don't know.
I'm gonna say the media. I'm gonna guess the media, And because cancel culture used to just be called popular opinion or
right.
popularity, right? I like what you say. I don't like what you say.
Think back to your lifetime. Our parents were trying to, our great grandparents were trying to kill rock and roll.
Yeah.
Happily not in my family, because my family owned a nightclub. So, you know, they were all on top of music and stuff. But, I mean, forget it. It was the devil's tool, you know. And,
right.
and then banning, they couldn't show Elvis Presley from the waist down and stuff like that on TV. You know, every generation has something that somebody wants to cancel on them. But I do think you're right. I think it had to have been the press that coined that phrase.
And then what I also think is I think that we as the peon level of society really need to consider our own critical thinking skills. So like cancel culture becomes a thing in the very recent past. And then Mr. Potato Head and Dr. Seuss do their thing. And the world, all of us small people in the world go crazy fighting each other about Mr. Potato Head and Dr. Seuss. And in my mind, I am imagining some stunning 29-year-old, gorgeous marketer saying, you know what? We're not selling a lot of Mr. Potato Head. Why
do you
transgender that guy? Right?
No, but you know
and
what
I
it was?
And
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, and the Dr. Seuss thing, I see in sort of the same way, except it has a little more of a genuine look to me because while Dr. Seuss was living, he changed one of his books that he referred to Chinamen. And was derogatory in his language in the book. And he changed that while he was still living. So that makes that piece a little more genuine to me. But for everyone then to start being like, Dr. Seuss got canceled, what are you talking about? Dr. Seuss stopped printing 6 books and
right.
sold 1 billion more.
Right.
He's not canceled.
Right. You know what? And here's what happened with Mr. Potato Head. Because they had Mr. Potato Head and Mrs. Potato Head. And it wasn't selling right. So it was like, you know what? If we just combine this, and they have both. So they have the mustache and they have the curly girl hair and the curly girl eyelashes and stuff. But of course.
And wicked advertising.
But you know what? Here's the thing. The fact that the freaking GOP jumped all this, our senators are talking about this crap. It's like, are you kidding me? They're canceling Dr. Seuss. Can you believe it? It's like you said, they took 6 books out of publication. The estate. All the rest of the books are there. Now, you have the conspiracy theory. Yeah, Dr. Seuss's books weren't selling. Look at that. They said they took 6 out and, you know, they've sold how many, you know, books? I know plenty of people who was like, oh, my God, before they take them all off the shelves, I ordered the whole set. And I'm like, sucker.
Yeah.
Like, you fool.
Yeah.
But again, the fact, I'm serious, how other people from other countries have to be looking at the United States. I have friends, and it's their grandmothers. My girlfriend's Irish grandmother, she's the funniest person I've ever known. And we're sitting there, and she's like, what the fuck is going on? I'm like, what do you mean, man? This idiot in office, well, what the fuck with this orange face? And just, but I'm serious. People, because of the radio show, I have friends, I've been blessed with friends all around the world. And I love doing my Skype calls with them or Zoom or whatever and catching up. And every one of them, what the fuck is going on in your country? You know, every single one, I don't care their age. Anywhere between, you know, 19 and 85. You know, and it's like, geez, I didn't even know you would curse like that. And it's like, whoa, we're sitting there. My daughter was in Southeast Asia when the elections were going on with Hillary and Trump. And was like, Mommy, seriously, what the hell is going on? The, you know, watching all the primaries and everything else. I mean, I can remember watching the whole field get whittled down, and I'm sitting there with people who are watching these going with the debates going, how is this guy even up there? I mean, is this a freaking joke? You know, and the flip side, I totally understand the experiment of, okay, you know, we're sick of big government, you know, his whole thing of, you know, if Hillary got elected, you know, Goldman Sachs would be running the country. The only people from Goldman and Sachs who weren't in his administration were Goldman and Sachs. I mean, it was in a, you put a guy who fought the EPA the hardest, literally the guy who ran a corporation who fought the EPA for 35 years, and this is who you put in charge of the EPA. You put a woman like Betsy DeVos in charge of education, whose claim to fame is being the Amway heiress, who's never set foot in a public school in her entire life, and this is who's, you know, you're an educator.
Do you ever listen to, oh, I can't even believe I'm going to say out loud that I'm listening to this podcast. Michael Cohen's podcast?
I have not.
Oh, it's called Mea Culpa. And,
I bet it is.
it's got a deadly awesome theme song. And he does a little talk about what's going on at the beginning of the end. At the beginning and at the end of his podcast, and then he does an interview of someone, and I mean, people, of course, are flocking to talk to him, and he's still on house arrest, but he's quite open about his experiences with this administration, and you know, definitely check it out. So anyway. I remember him talking about like he says that Trump did not expect to be elected, and
of
that
course
when
he didn't.
When it no, and so when it came time to build the transition team, like as things are getting closer and looking, you know, like that might happen, they had a copy. I can't remember who it was from. I want to say Rand Paul, but that could be wrong. A copy of a transition book, and all of the people who need to be there to run the thing. And he said when it came time, basically everybody was just like writing down whatever name they could think of whoever might be, you know, able.
Willing to work with him?
Yeah, willing. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway,
you
I can't
know
believe
what?
I said that on a live radio show.
That's okay. You know, we actually live in countries where we're allowed to say this stuff.
Oh,
you know,
that's
here's
right.
The thing.
That's
I
true.
Agree with you.
That's right.
I think he did this to further his brand. He never expected to win. And believe me, you could tell he never expected to win because at his inaugural address, at, you know, the inauguration at the balls, they looked like a deer in headlights. It was like, what has got... You know, and it's funny. I actually predicted that he would resign within 2 weeks, that he would just say, you know what, this is way above my cap. You know, I can't be president of the United States. You know,
yeah, Mary Trump says that would never happen.
Well, you know, it's so funny. And then I was saying that to my brother, who's like, yeah, that guy's ego would never let him do that. I was like, yeah, you're right. He got, but then my brother made his wrong prediction that, but his ego's so big, he would never want to go down as the worst president. So, you know, at least he'll listen to people, you know, he's reasonable, you know, and everything else. I called my brother. I'm like, so how's that reasonability thing working out for you? When he launched the 50 drones, knowing the Joint Chiefs of Congress didn't, nobody knew. And see, that's where that instance right there, so young in his presidency, had Congress sat him down and the Senate sat him down and the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the heads of the military sat that man down to let him know, look, here's the rules. Here's what you do. That is something you have no, you cannot unilaterally make, but nobody did it. And you know what? Let's face it. In his entire life, no one ever let him fail. Ever. The banks didn't let him go bankrupt. The banks would just keep giving him money. He never had, ever, 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 even though he's failed at everything he's ever done, he's never had to face those failures because people have always bailed him out. People elected a man knowing that he had a fake university that he wound up having to pay back, you know, $300 million to people that plunked down $35,000 to go to Trump University. That was not a man knowing that he pointed the finger at the Clinton Foundation. And they literally, from the day it opened till the day it closed, they went through every book and could account for every dime that was brought into that foundation. But yet it was corrupt and Hillary was pay for play and this and that. And look what it did. His foundation literally got closed because of fraud, because of, you know, him using the money from his foundation for his own personal use and everything else. Trump stakes. Gone. Trump airline gone. The casinos, people auctioned off the right to blow up the casino in Atlantic City. You know, I mean, it's amazing. And if anything, all this presidency did was taint his brand. He ruined his brand. You know, he could have, the worst thing that man ever did was become president of the United States. He could have lived his whole life in the limelight and people, again, just covering his mistakes and everything else. Now, people are after him.
Yeah,
you know?
There's going to be some repercussions now, I think, maybe.
Oof.
What I think is interesting from my no such thing as a bully perspective, So my role in No Such Thing as a Bully is teaching adults to strengthen themselves so that they can teach those strengthening skills to their children. And when you're strong enough, you cannot be affected by being pushed around. People can try to push you around. Or they can call you names, or they can slander you, or they can say whatever they want to say about you, but you are strong enough that you don't take those messages on yourself, and you know that whatever happens, you'll deal with it. You'll get through it. It may create a pivot. It may, create a scenario where you have to make some decisions, but you're going to get through whatever that is. And when I looked at all, so again, into the psychology of politics, which is really where my interest is, when I looked at all those people around Trump who would not say the things that needed to be said, all the anonymous sources to media who would not speak out loud, the anonymous book written about what's going on. And I know it came out who that was. I can't even remember. But the level of submission that started right from the beginning, the level of submission and fear tells me that our highest leaders need the training that I have in No Such Thing as a Bully and need to be able to incorporate those ways of thinking into their lives so they can stand up for the things that are important to them and really be there to serve the people.
You know, I have to tell you how often I thought of you and what you do with No Such Thing as a Bully when I would watch those rallies and listen to the things that he said. And it's like, again, the words of the president matter. And he gave permission for people to treat other people poorly because they weren't white. Because his base, he played to his base of white, disenfranchised. It's an amazing thing that people that are living in the poorest parts of this country were so excited that the Dow was doing well.
Yeah.
You know, that NASDAQ numbers. It's like, really? So how are those investments working out for you in that tar paper shack? I'm like,
yeah.
Seriously? This is the, when you talk about the psychology of politics, here's a question for you. How do you brainwash to support and vote for you while you are literally in front of their face stripping away their rights? While you are in front of their face stripping away the programs that kept food on their table. They couldn't wait to get rid of Obamacare until they found out it was the Affordable Care Act, and it would mean that they didn't have any insurance. So how does that happen? How do you keep voting for people? These people, Mitch McConnell got reelected by a big margin, and this is the guy who wants to make sure that those stimulus packages don't get passed.
Yeah.
And yet they vote for him. They've kept that fossil in office for how many decades? So how does that happen, Kelly? What's the psychology behind that?
I don't get Mitch McConnell. The psychology behind it, I think, is sort of a dream psychology. I need so many things. I am in need, but I would like to think that I can achieve what this other person is achieving. And that's sort of the cult mindset that comes on with Trump. Now, the way that I think that you break it is exactly what Biden is doing, really making sure that people have what they need. There's a point of survival where, and I've been maybe close to this, but not exactly there, but there's a point of survival where when you lose another thing, you just don't, that's just what you expect to happen to you. That's just how life is. That doesn't even necessarily connect with what a politician is doing. That's just my life. So, you know, so now I'm so used to living on the edge anyway, that when you push me a little closer to the edge, I'm like I'm mixing analogies here, but I'm like a frog in cold water that starts to boil. I hardly even notice that things are that much worse because they're always worse. What's the difference? And so in order to break, my belief is that In order to break that mindset, it will take a concerted effort to make sure that people are getting what they need and to make sure that they understand how that is happening. And so to that end, I was glad to see that after that first COVID bill passed there with Biden, that then they did a kind of swing around to explain what this was all about, because I think that that's an important piece that people have to make that connection. This is how government can provide and can make things easier if you have a government who cares about its people.
Well, you know, here's the thing. As citizens of this country, as taxpaying citizens of this country, as people who live in this country, when you look at the fact that somebody who's making $40,000 a year is paying more in federal taxes than Amazon, because Amazon pays $0 in federal taxes. They pay state taxes, but they don't pay one penny in federal taxes because of all the little loopholes and all of the wonderful things and stuff like that. And what aggravates me to the degree is that all of these humongous corporations have made their billions and billions of dollars on the very people that they're withholding that money from. That, to me, is their give back. If you owe $15 billion in taxes on the $250 billion you made this year, I'm really sorry if you can't get by on the $235 billion. How are you going to make ends meet? These people,
I'm
sorry. And, you know, but here's the difference. I look at you, you know, everybody, let's face it, no government is perfect. Every country's got its own issues and problems and everything else. Canadians, your tax dollars actually go to better your life. You have health care. You have education. You have a government that has paid you to stay home. Yeah, it's really inconvenient and this sucks and everything else, but you have food on the table and you have money every month coming in and everything else, because that's what your tax dollars are supposed to do. This infrastructure bill that President Biden is trying to pass, well, is going to pass. You know, and people are arguing, oh, well, you know, this doesn't need to be in it. And he's shoving things in there that really are an infrastructure. And I love Jen Psaki broke it all down. She's like, you may not think that the lead pipes that bring water need to be, you know, aren't part of infrastructure. The president doesn't agree with you. He thinks who they are. You may think that the bridges aren't part of this. You may think that, you know, all of these different things aren't part. Yes, they are. Yes, they are. Making sure our schools are safe, of course it's part of the infrastructure of the country. You know, education, let's face it, Kelly, you know it. Education is how we break the systemic racism. Education is how we change the languaging about bullying and creating the programs and the resources to have something like No Such Thing as a Bully come in and open people's minds, educate them. You know, there's a woman in jail for 5 years because she lied about her address so her daughter could go to a better school. And then you have Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughlin paying people to get to take their kids' tests and whatnot, and they got a slap on the wrist. Oh, yeah, both of them had to go to, you know, a country club jail for a couple of months. Oh, poor them. woman's in jail for 5 years because she lied about her address.
Yeah.
Why did she lie about her address? To try to get her child a better education. No, just because you live in a poorer section, you shouldn't have to suffer in education. Your education should be there because that's how you get out of poverty. Our government should be, I love what Biden says, about lifting up the you know, lower class and widening the middle class. And that's what it's about. His first bill that he passed, that first relief bill, took 50 or 100,000 kids out of poverty. One in five kids in the United States lives in poverty. He cut that in half. And
I wonder what our Canadian statistic is on that.
Not one Republican voted for that bill. Not one. But now they're going around talking about how great it is and they're so glad we support it and whatnot. And I guess the people who voted for them forgot that, dude, you voted against this. That what's going on for 4 years, the Republicans have been fighting for infrastructure and getting money for infrastructure. Now that Biden wants to do it, now all of a sudden, that's not the way to go. Infrastructure is not a good thing. We've got too many other things to be thinking about. It's unbelievable to me. I miss the days because I grew up at a time where the government worked together for the American people. And yeah, you had two different parties, but they came together to work across party lines for the betterment of the United States. You know, Senator McCain, one of the last things he did before his brain cancer took him from the floor and ultimately took his life, he was the deciding vote that kept the Affordable Care Act in place.
That big thumbs down.
Yep. And from that moment on, forget it. Trump, you know, not that Trump ever really liked McCain, because like he said, you know, he got caught. I like the guys who didn't get caught.
Mm.
It's like, are you kidding me? Mr. Bonespur, you know, John McCain served our country. He enlisted at 17 years old, right out of high school. That guy was a POW. People made fun of him when he and Obama did their town hall. Oh, look how stiff he is and stuff. I was like, are you seriously laughing at that man? That man's arms are stiff because they were broken in about eight places, each one. He walks the way he walks because almost every bone in his body at one point was broken as he was being tortured and never gave up the United States. And eventually, you know, but spent his entire life in service to this country. And that was probably one of the biggest things that man ever did, was continuing to make sure that people had health care, continuing to make sure that they couldn't be denied for pre-existing conditions. Not for nothing. If that passed, anybody who had COVID would never get insurance again.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
You know,
it's crazy.
Just the whole, I agree with you that there needs to be more. Of course, I agree that there needs to be more coming together and making decisions in best interest of the people. It's just phenomenal how much has gotten warped along the way. So somebody like John McCain, I think, you know, seems to have kept his integrity, and I think I can name a couple of other politicians, but you know, it amazes me how many people, whether American politics or First Nations chief and council elections in Canada or our provincial elections or whatever, I see people wanting to get into leadership positions for such good reasons and then quickly getting so corrupted into the culture that already exists.
It's sad, isn't
and
it?
And I just think that's such a pity.
That's why term limits are so important.
Yeah.
You know, way back when, here in the United States, you had term limits. And you know what? Politics was your civic duty. And so the educated old white men out there, you know, did their 4 years, 6 years, 8 years, and then they went back home. And they worked on their farm or worked in their publishing and went back to work. In the 20th century, you now had the career politician. And that's when special interest groups were able to put money in their pockets. People didn't get rich in the government. There weren't entitlement packages until they got voted in by the very people entitled to get them. They didn't ask the American people if the tax dollars that they're paying to pay somebody, I mean, hell, I could get somebody to elect me to Congress for a year, for 4 years. Come on. I already have my slogan. Leave your beer, bring your bong. I would totally win on that slogan.
Jeez.
Are you kidding? I would totally win on that slogan, Callie. Absolutely. Are you kidding? And then I could retire on a golden parachute for the rest of my life. That's ridiculous. You talk about welfare. You want to complain about a breakfast program and lunch programs in school because that's a drain. Making sure that a child is fed. How is a child supposed to be responsible for the fact that their parents aren't making enough money or that they're in foster care or living with their aunt or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to complain, oh, why should somebody working at McDonald's make $15 an hour? Well, if this pandemic has shown you anything, it's shown you why people at McDonald's should make $15 an hour. And the people behind the cash registers, people who actually kept this country running. Because, sadly, Joe's Pizzeria, that's been around since 1969, it's hard to stay open when you're making 20 pizzas a week because people are in lockdown. But fast food companies that have these huge corporations behind them were able to stay open because where's somebody going to go after their 12-hour shift to get something to eat
mm-hmm.
as they drag themselves back to bed and then get up and do it all over again because they're an essential worker somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, if this has shown us anything and you have people wanting to fight it, it's like, but everything has gone up but that. The same house that 20 years ago you could buy for $50,000 is now $450,000. But minimum wage hasn't gotten, you know, minimum wage in the United States is $7.25 an hour, I think. I mean,
yeah, that's shocking. Although in Canada, $7.25 US is $100. It's not $100. I'm just doing a Google search about poverty, children's poverty in Canada, and it looks like we're probably on par with the States, 1 in 5.
It's just sad.
It's shameful.
It is shameful. And what's more shameful is that people voted against a bill that raised half those kids out of poverty. Half. That man
well, even that, I my mind automatically goes to the idea that it lifts them out of poverty for a short time, and we have so many other things we have to do as well.
Oh, without a doubt. And that's what this whole infrastructure bill is about. All of the, I look at Biden and one of the things that I have to say about this guy, as we're getting ready, I told you, didn't I tell you that 2 hours goes really fast?
True.
2 hours is a long time, and it really isn't when it comes down to it. We have a president who actually understands what it is to be in the middle class, who actually understands, remembers when his dad lost his job and they had to move from Pennsylvania to Delaware because that's where dad could get a job, you know, but also remembers how dad could work and mom stayed home because you could survive on that minimum wage that your dad was getting paid. My favorite movie is It's a Wonderful Life. George Bailey made $45 a week. Okay?
Yeah.
$45 a week. And had a nice house. You know, the houses back then were $5,000, Mr. Potter. You know? That $5,000 house, it's the same freaking house as $450,000 now. It's the same house.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but this is the whole thing, and it's again, we finally have someone in office who gives a rat's ass. And I just hope that he, you know, I love that he's constantly saying, it's like, look, I don't want to govern by executive order. I want to work with the Republicans and make them see why this is good for the American people. But believe me, if I have to govern by executive order, I will, because ultimately this is what the American people need. You know?
Yeah, he just has to do it and get those results and then see what happens and take it from there. Really, because once people are getting results, that's when the potential of the bipartisan stuff begins. Maybe.
That's exactly right. That 100%. 100%. Because, you know,
maybe at the end.
That's right. You know, we are wrapping up over here. I can't wait to talk to you next month. I really can't.
Yeah, this has been fun.
It really has been. And for all of you tuning in, thanks so much for being here. We are not even going to close out with our theme song because it's going to get cut off because we literally have a hard stop as opposed to our other shows where it's a soft stop. But this is Dori DiCarlo on behalf of me and Kelly Carius. Thanks for joining us on Moms After Dark. Next month, we will be back. Who knows what's going to be going on in a month? It's going to be interesting to see what 4 weeks brings. So, Kelly, thanks so much for being here with me tonight.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, absolutely my pleasure. We will be talking next month. So for all of us here, we're going to say bye for now.